Hey everybody, it is another Monday. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and it's time for another Monday Night Live with my favourite American 2 weeks in a row, Sean Rossap. Sean, you're 2 for 2 now.
Wait, I'm your favourite American 2 weeks in a row, or because we've been doing this show longer than 2 weeks in a row, so I'm very confused by this.
So initially, you were one of the top Americans.
Okay.
But like it's built, as we've got to know each other more, and as I, you know, because you're just as nice behind the scenes, and that doesn't always happen, right?
Yeah, so like, way nicer than Sandra, right?
Oh, she's a bitch. You know, like just
God, the worst.
It is so. I always love like with Sandra. Her my favorite opinion that like when people have never heard her talk, she hates the Undertaker so much.
Really?
Because her first wrestling memory when she had like been watching for like so she started watching in 2010 when like Swagger was world champion, and then so anyway, so she'd been watching bits and pieces, and then there's that. You know, that iconic segment on Raw in 2011 where Undertaker and Triple H came out and just stayed at the sign?
Yeah.
And she was just like, who cares? Like, I don't know anything about these people. They're just staring at a sign, and now I'm supposed to think this is the best thing ever? And, like, I think that from, like, 2011 onwards, you're not really given anything new with The Undertaker. It's kind of like you loved him growing up. So, like, it's... So she's just been like, and then he beats Bray Wyatt in, like, 7 minutes. So she's like, I do not care for you, sir, which has always popped me. But anyway, Saunders.
Was she excited for Grandmaster Sexay to come back that same month? Do you remember that?
Oh, that awful dancing when he had to like do it on his own.
I was emulating that dance in a dorm room, in my dorm room, and I busted my ass.
My favorite bit of that, because I'll need to find the Raw so we can like tweet about it, but like so it's during the Lawler Cole program, and Cole's bringing out Grandmaster Sexay to try and like make fun of him, and they have the old music and Grandmaster Sexay's doing the dancing, and it cuts to Michael Cole for a second in the ring doing like a dad dance for like 3 seconds. It's so good.
I love it.
And that it's terrible. Anyway, Sean, how was your weekend? What's going on? I saw that you made another trip to the local toy store.
Oh, I did.
Put on your Instagram, making me jealous. How was your weekend?
Any weekend that I have off, and I had off the majority of this weekend, I try to hit up the toy store. I go to Toy HQ in Lexington. Free plug for them. Lexington, Kentucky. Great dudes. Really great people. And... like, we're hatching content ideas there. Like, I'm just sitting there thinking, like, man, do you know how great it would be to just have RJ City walk by these Muppet toys and talk about them? Like, just, I want to hear that guy talk about the accessories within the Muppet action figures at this toy store. That's content right there. So, even when I'm off, I'm thinking of stuff to do, but I love those people, and I go see them often. And my wife and I watched the entire first 2 seasons of The Boys this weekend.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's you got a lot in this weekend.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't a lot of like wrestling stuff to cover. I watched the main event of the UFC show. Oh, it makes me so happy that I don't have to sit through 7-hour UFC shows anymore. I love MMA. I'll always like love MMA, but I like watching main events a little bit more and enjoying what little time I have off, and yeah, it was a good time.
I got to watch I guess I can say this now because like people know, but like I got to watch Rangers versus Celtic, the football game, the soccer game if you're from America, and Rangers beat Celtic 2-0, which never happens. So it was a beautiful thing to watch on Saturday. So yeah, but and there wasn't really much wrestling because this weekend we got Bound for Glory and Hell in a Cell. But you were breaking news earlier today, actually, with on Fightful Select about Mustafa Ali relating to tonight's Raw, giving us the news I think we all really wanted to hear.
Yeah, so I woke up on Monday morning to somebody in WWE who watches and listens to the shows, whether it be Fightful or here, and they say, we're planning on doing something that's going to make you really happy. And I said, well, that doesn't narrow it down because all I need to be happy about wrestling is for it to make sense. And y'all don't do that very well. And they said, well, we are tonight. And I said, oh, really? And the plan as of early this morning on Monday was for Mustafa Ali to reveal that he was the SmackDown hacker. Not in a big grandiose way. I'm told it's like a throwaway line like, yeah, by the way, that was me. And I was like, that's all I need. That's all I need. Make sense of it. tie up that loose end. But as of this morning, it was supposed to be a really short promo, and he was supposed to tie it in. And I was told that it was pitched like, hey, by the way, can we just tie this in? Can we put a bow on this? Because people are asking, people are complaining, and it's really easy to do. And anytime I report anything that's supposed to happen with creative, I always have to say, I know that a lot of people make fun of the plans change thing, but I cannot tell you how much plans change. I still do get a hold of scripts sometimes when I want, but I have to be a little bit more careful than I used to be, because I used to get them, and quite frankly, I used to post them. But there were times when I would get these scripts that weren't even handed out until 8:05, 8:15, and what was supposed to happen at 8:45 would not happen. And that's the nature of any live television program, where you have to adjust for time and all that. That was something I was told this morning, and I hope it happens, because it makes Mustafa look good, it makes the creative look good, and it just puts a bow on something. I wish they'd do this for New Day. I wish they would go up to Kofi Kingston backstage, like Adam Pearce would walk up to him and say, how do you feel about you asking to be drafted separately from Big E? Like he's pushing Big E into being a single star. Like he wanted it to happen type of thing. Just makes sense of those little things, and it goes such a long way.
Yeah, I feel like if you were to like poll wrestling fans and be like, WWE will do, you can get them to do one thing in the programming. Like, the hacker is a big thing from this year. People were like, I remember Gary Cassidy was like, he'd found like coordinates of like where things were and all that kind of stuff. So, and like you say, for Ali, this is just going to like give Mustafa Ali a big boost. It's going to make him look really clever, and like he has had plans and he's been doing stuff. So, I'm glad to hear that that's the plan, but I also feel like I'm aware that it may not happen.
He has told me before when we've spoken, like, he knows that WWE doesn't make sense of some stuff, but he's also a pretty optimistic dude based on my limited experience with him, which is maybe one or two conversations ever. Actually, you weren't at that Toronto thing where he did the interview. You weren't in that day, were you?
No, I don't think
you
so.
You flew it. That was the time you flew in late. You missed it. Oh, poor Kenny.
I know.
Oh,
fuck.
He was a pleasure.
Well, no,
he was wonderful.
KJ on our team did interview him, to be
fair.
Yes,
he did.
I've still got the photo. I don't know if I ever sent you the photo of like what this. I think I showed you what the storm looked like in New York that night when I got stranded, and it looks like Independence Day. Oh. Like, and it was like, I was like, I can't get there. Thank God that KJ had some ability to pull all that off. Or I say some ability. Had loads of ability to just like take that and run with it. Because otherwise, if I'd have lost all that content, I'd have been raging.
It was beautiful in Toronto that week too.
Oh, fuck off. You don't need to rub it in. I was there the next day though, at least.
I miss Canada so much right now. You have no idea.
The idea to get on a plane and get served an overpriced drink or piece of food, and like just the stuff about travel that I used to hate, I'm now like, I'll take it. Just bring it to me eventually. Something else I wanted to just bring up while we're talking about stuff that happened over the weekend. Bailey was a guest on PWI's podcast. She was recently voted number one in the PWI Women's 100. And she talked about turning heel was her decision. And I feel like people might not give her enough credit that like she could have basically just stayed the old Bailey. And it would, you know, she would have probably just had a job for good. And she would have just stayed in the storylines. It would have been really stale. I think it's a pretty gutsy move that she decided, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the chance. And it couldn't really have paid off any better for her, right?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. She has been, I think, over the last full year, the MVP of WWE. I mean, you could argue Drew as well. Drew's been great. But Bayley carried SmackDown on her back. And not only did she carry SmackDown on her back, a large portion of that time, she was also on Raw helping carry that, like complimenting Drew McIntyre. That's why I think you got to say she's the MVP, because Drew carried one show and he was great at it. And I think he's awesome. Bayley carried one show, then went over to another show and said, hey, let me help out with that. Oh, by the way, sometimes she'd pop up on NXT too. I think she's the MVP of the last 365 days. Well-deserved that spot too. And when wrestlers go to bat for themselves like this, it usually works out pretty well.
And the one other thing I wanted to ask you about, because Sondra and I were talking about this on the Inside the Ropes podcast at the weekend, we were talking about how after we'd watched AEW last week, that like there's something kind of missing for us about the Miro presentation, about him being partners with Kip Sabian, and like, you know, like how, why would they have been friends? Like, it a lot of it's not making sense. And I know that we talk quite a lot, and it is like, I feel like you should have a t-shirt saying, "I just need it to make sense." Like, that should
be make it make sense. Make it make sense. That's all I ask. If something makes sense, I'm probably going to by default enjoy it. It'd have to be pretty bad because I want to like pro wrestling.
So for you, I mean, with Miro, what do you think AEW need to do to just make us feel more like, okay, I buy the partnership. I buy that they are pals and he's going to be the best man and all that kind of stuff.
Well, they got to, like I said, make sense of the friendship, because I don't doubt that they would just have met each other online and become buddies via streaming. Sure. But we know who Rusev is, or Miro is. We know he's this jovial, happy guy. I would have just had him. One, you make him look stupid when he's mad at the best friends who got thrown into his arcade cabinet. We were watching the show. We saw FTR throw him into it. Why wouldn't he be mad at them? Like, that makes him look bad. I think a lot of people will think I mean like Festus here, but I would have him be that jovial guy and be like, "Oh no, it's okay, guy. It's accidents happen." And then right after that, he has a match and you just see him murder a guy in the ring. And then he stares at one of the best friends and they're like, "Oh shit, well, this is something." And then he gets out and he even helps best friends back. But you know that eventually when that match is made, he's going to slaughter somebody. But he's that normal, happy guy outside that we know he is. But we also know that people like that can turn it on once they get into the ring. I think they could play off of that. I mean, him being so vicious in the ring and so happy outside of it and a nice dude is what made so many people like him. So I would probably lean into that. But I think he came in at a tough time, because I'm not saying WWE rejects. I hate that term. We have a lot of WWE veterans, so to speak, that are there and getting heavy pushes. I mean, look at their champions. Brody Lee, the former TNT champion, he was one of those guys. John Moxley, FTR. You know, you kind of want to differentiate yourself a little bit, and I think they're doing that. I don't think there's a need for an immediate push for Miro, but he very much seems like the kind of guy that's going to get a little bit of a push, face Moxley in a month and a half, lose, and then reset, because we've seen that happen time and time again.
Yeah, because the thing with Miro is he has so much personality. He is, you know, even like Total Divas, he was great on that show with Lana. He's, the sky's the limit for him. I just wish that they would, it's not quite as jarring, but like the Miro Kip Sabian friendship is kind of like the Matt Hardy private party where you're just like, I don't know if I see it. But
I'm okay with that, though, because I look at private party, I see a lot of the Hardy boys in them. So I would kind of like Matt Hardy to dress up like 1999 Michael Hayes. That would be funny.
But with the cane.
I remember a lot of people when Inner Circle formed, they're like, "Does this work? Does this work?" And in my head, it's like, I can see why people are saying that, because for decades they saw WWE and WCW and even TNA book people of the same race together. Like, "Oh, it's got to be a bunch of white guys. It's got to be a bunch of black guys. It's got to be a bunch of Latino guys." But you see these unusual combinations that end up working out, like based on, like, nobody thought that Chris Jericho would be hanging out with Santana and Ortiz. Like, and it's worked swimmingly. It's been amazing. They throw Jake Hager in there. Okay, well, maybe not the perfect fit, but...
And I think if you know, because how long has Matt been with Private Party now? It's been months, a couple of months, right?
Yeah, months.
Like,
yeah.
It still doesn't feel like it's clicking. So hopefully it does soon. But and with the big thing I'm hoping for with the Miro Kip Sabian thing is the bachelor party, or this, I mean, we call it the stag do. That's going to be the one that hooks us, or is really fun. So fingers crossed they do it. But let's move on to your topics, the news that has been happening in the wrestling world. Let's talk Ring of Honor and their revamp plans. What's going on?
So I've been hearing this for a while. Like, wrestlers that they're speaking to about coming in I've mentioned this as well, that Ring of Honor is kind of telling these people, "We've got a revamp coming. We're going to be doing things differently." We've seen some of it with how they shoot the Pure Wrestling Tournament, which is so much better. The production is just... drastically improved over what it was. I would like to see them move away from everything on the show being black: ring ropes, mat, apron, turnbuckle, barricade, floor mats, like all that stuff. But they have said that they're planning a bit of a revamp. Jonathan Gresham took over the women's division at the beginning of the year. They were already planning on revamping that with a tournament because they lost Kelly Klein in that messy situation. But I'm told that'll be happening a little bit later in the year. Delirious has been reaching out to wrestlers personally and speaking with them directly. I don't really have an update on Marty Scurll and that mess, but they have Ring of Honor specifically has taken heavy feedback from wrestlers over the last year to implement changes. I want to say about a year ago, they flew in all their talent to HQ and said, give us your ideas. We're going to make them work. And I mean, that's gotten rave reviews from their roster, because even again, before all this happened, in the first few months, they had implemented dozens of changes that we might not notice as viewers, but the wrestlers noticed. And that's important to morale. They can pay these people, but morale is important too. And they've shown over the last year that they're willing to change and adjust. It would have been real easy for them, for that Marty Scurll thing, to just be like, hey, you know what? We're not running for a few months anyway. Let's just sweep it under the rug. They didn't do that. I gotta credit Ring of Honor. They've handled things really well, it seems, over the last year or so.
Yeah, they've really taken care of, I think they've been one of the best talent as well, right? During the pandemic, I know people who work there and have had nothing but great things to say about how good they've been.
They paid a bunch of people that were just on per appearance. Like, they went and they actually gave a couple people raises during the pandemic too. But there were people that were supposed to come in for the WrestleMania week shows, and they aren't under contract. ROH could have just canceled that. But I'm told that they paid a lot of those people, if not all of them. I can't say all of them because I haven't spoken to all of them. But they paid a bunch of people. So that's really awesome. That says a lot to me. And considering their parent company, Sinclair, doesn't have the best reputation for some of the things that it pulls, ROH going above and beyond to do this is very promising.
Also, there's some frustration within NXT. What is going on, and what's the frustration?
So it's unfortunate because, as I had mentioned in the past, they've got a lot of injuries, and that's unfortunate. But there's a lot of people. Basically, they have a gorilla table at NXT right now. There was a lot of frustration there at a recent set of tapings, and most of the wrestlers I talked to, they're like, "Man, we get it." They're down Tegan Knox and Karrion Kross and Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly and Ridge Holland. And they wrote off Adam Cole for a couple weeks. So they were bare bones. So they were like, man, we get this frustration. It's unfortunate. And I'd reported this on Select, which pretty much was just confirmed by TV. They don't want to take the title off of Finn Balor. They don't want to do that right after Karrion Kross was forced to vacate that. So they're trying to wait it out and see what they can do or what they can make work. And there's a lot of people that are just frustrated there. Not like mad at management or anything like that, just frustrated. And it's not all bad by any stretch of the imagination. I had a lot of wrestlers that said that they loved how the Johnny, Candace, and Indy Hartwell segments were put together. And there are a lot of wrestlers there that are told, oh, well, we need weeks to build somebody. We need time to build people. But now a lot of those wrestlers are saying, well, what about Indy Hartwell? Like, that was a great one-night build, and she wasn't even on the show. Like, you all did that. Like, you all are capable of doing that. We know you are. You know you are. So let's do it more. So there's some good and some bad there, but it's not a lot of like, oh, this is all NXT's fault and their creative fault. It's, man, it sucks that we're in this situation. Let's try to make the best of it.
And then the final story is, and I can't believe you finally managed to crack it, the AEW mole, the story that has been right behind GTV, and we want to find out who it is.
So around the same time that I heard about all this frustration, somebody said, by the way, Tino Sabatelli is on our roster sheet right now. And I was like, yeah, he got canned in April, right? And they're like, yeah, but there's errors on that thing all the time, so we'll write it out and we'll see. Well, he was backstage at the last set of NXT tapings, and I mentioned this to a couple of people in AEW, and they said, well, he's the mole. And I can't say for sure that he is the mole. I can just say that people in AEW think he's the mole. And when I say that, I mean that Chris Jericho mentioned an NXT reject months ago leaking information. Now, I don't quite get that. I don't know what got out that he wasn't thinking was going to get out. Like, what was out there that that anybody else could have put out there? Because I know there's a Reddit post with some fake spoilers or something like that, but Jericho flat out accused someone of being an NXT spy. And again, I cannot say that he was the one that released like the Eric Bischoff appearing as the moderator news or anything like that, because I don't talk to Tino Sabatelli, but I can tell you that AEW, their people think that he was, and he's back in NXT. So that's got to raise some questions and some eyebrows.
Well, because I guess there's only going to be a handful of people, if that you can sort of put two and two together to get four, right? There's not really, there's not really that many.
Yeah, but I mean, there were a lot of people there. It is not hard for me to get people to talk about what happens at AEW tapings at all. Like, it's very easy. I mean, you've got any number. You've got dozens of uncontracted people there.
So why do you think that they specifically think it's him? Like, do you think it's just... Because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff from AEW doesn't tend to get leaked from taped shows. The Bischoff one seems to be the one main thing that has leaked, right?
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, some other stuff is leaked. I mean, some fake stuff is leaked. I mean, Tony Khan straight up hit me up one night and was like, by the way, there are fake spoilers out there. I don't want you to post them. He's like, I'm not trying to screw you over. There are fake spoilers out there. And that's when... The Rowan, did you remember hearing about Rowan debuting in AEW?
No.
Oh, God, there were legit fake spoilers out there that Brody Lee was going to beat Cody for the title, which he did, but that Rowan was going to debut there and attack Cody and lead to this. And he had the courtesy of saying, hey, there are fake spoilers out there. You shouldn't run them. And I'm like, all right, thank you. I appreciate that. But... There's, I think that stuff like that has given people some hesitant to run some spoilers. Now there are fans there. So I know on any given night, a dozen people that are there between fans and uncontracted people that are working dark or whatever that may be. I don't know what led them to think that he was just going to do that, but they did. And he's back in NXT, so it reaffirmed a lot of people's beliefs. I can tell you that much.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So we've got loads of questions, though, from our listeners. So let's just get straight into them. Who have we got? Okay, Kyle Burdick wants to know, with the draft over, should Raw and SmackDown go back to having their brand pay-per-views like they did in 2016 to 2018?
I don't think so. I like the NXT AEW method where you build to a gigantic show once a month or so. Like you build some big time matches and you like make a special event out of that. I mean, I don't think SmackDown needs to do like Halloween Havoc or anything, but spread some of the wealth. You're getting the majority of your money from TV deals. So I think they should just do that.
The one thing, I mean, I wouldn't be adverse to it either way. The thing that I think bothers me more is that I really think they need to move the draft from where it is in the year, because the whole idea of like in October, I actually really like the idea that like everybody is up for draft. So like when they said, you know, Drew's drafted to Raw, it's because, well, Raw has to draft him. You know, if they want him, they have to draft him. But like the problem is that then a month later, we're meant to believe that Survivor Series, these wrestlers are going to fight for their brand. And it's one month. So, like, I don't know when you would do it. Maybe April's too early. But, like, if they could maybe do it in, like, June or July, I feel like it would just make things at Survivor Series feel a little bit more epic. Because I will die on the hill. I think that 2016 Survivor Series was sensational. That men's match with, like, Roman, Seth, Jericho, Owens, and Braun against AJ, Wyatt, Orton, Ambrose, and Styles was brilliant. And it felt big. It felt like those wrestlers were fighting for the brand that they were on.
To me, the most surefire awesome match is a Survivor Series match with stakes. If they have something worth fighting for, then I'm all in. I mean, for the love of God, I was super interested in 2004 Survivor Series with Maven in the main event. Because they were like, you know what? If you guys beat Edge, Batista, Snitsky, and Triple H, you guys will be in charge of Raw the next 4 weeks. And I was like, that's cool. Like, that's an awesome idea. Like, they get to push things for their own motives. Like, that would be really, really great.
They should,
love
tie
that.
A Rumble thing in. Something yes. to do with the Rumble.
And as far as the draft, they already crammed Money in the Bank the month right after WrestleMania. So it's like, man, they need to spread some of this stuff out. And like, I don't think it's a bad idea to do it at a different time of the year, because I hate when they show up a few weeks later with blue shirts on, like, yeah, we love our brand. And I'm like, do you? Because you don't.
There's a really funny, like, I think it's the 2017 Survivor Series where the Shield fought the New Day, and it's like, Roman just gets to wear his own gear, and Seth yes. and Dean had to wear the half Shield, half Raw shirts. And I was like, you wonder why people hate this guy? Like,
yes.
Because he gets to do his own thing. Anyway, sorry, I just remembered that. But,
oh, man.
Yeah, the t-shirts are difficult, but, yeah, I guess we'll see. Well, KJ from Inside the Ropes, from the Wrestling Roast, which you can listen to every Sunday. He says his profile picture on his Twitter is him interviewing Kofi Kingston in Toronto when I couldn't make it. Rubbing it in. Anyway, he said, is WWE building to a retribution traditional Survivor Series match, or is WWE going to do another interbrand 5 vs 5? Versus five match, maybe. If the latter, who do you think some of the participants would be? Did you like the kind of triple thing that they did last year with NXT? Would you like to see that come back in the exact same format? How would you like to see Retribution figured into that?
I would not like to see them figured into it at all. I don't need to see another one of that. I think they should do their own thing. And I think they should say as much. They should be like, we weren't in the draft, so we're not going to do Survivor Series either. We'll do our own type of thing. I think you're cramming in a little bit too much there if you do that. But yeah, I like NXT standing on its own, and somebody, William Regal, even saying we weren't invited to participate in the draft, so we just took some of their wrestlers. We took Ember Moon from them. I think that would work fine, but I would keep Survivor Series as is. And I know that they got it integrated a little bit to promote the show, so
I didn't like it as much last year. With the, I think triple threats is, whether it's team matches or single people in triple threats, it's hard to make that feel special over a whole show.
Yeah, it's a mess. There's so many people, and here's the thing I don't like about this: in any given match, in that kind of match, you got to have 14 people getting beaten. Like, you gotta have like 14 people lose a match if you're gonna have a sole survivor. If you do a 3-team, 5-person on a team Survivor Series match, a lot of people are getting pinned that probably you don't want to get pinned on your show. You want to keep as many people strong as possible, right? They do all these DQs and no contests and double countouts, but then you go right there and you got Kevin Owens getting pinned in 7 minutes. You got Walter getting pinned in 3 minutes.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Oh,
exactly. Now, it's by Drew, and that looks pretty good in retrospect, and I think they could make something out of that in the future. Like, Drew going face-to-face with Walter and saying, it took me, like, 3 minutes to beat you. They could play off of that.
Yeah, Drew Walter would be great. Anthony Fitzpatrick wants to know, Kenny, if Sean was to travel to Scotland, what Scottish delicacy would you make him try first? Ooh, are you vegetarian or anything, or are you...
I'm not vegetarian.
Okay, well, that opens up a whole prospect. So I would make him try square sausage, a roll in square sausage. That would be a must, which is basically like a sausage patty that's a square, but it tastes different to what you would think a sausage patty would taste like. And it's in like a bread roll, but the bread roll is like way better than the bread rolls that you guys have. I think you would like it. But the
I'm looking it up right now.
Roll and square sausage. See, when you put a bit of ketchup on it as well, sensational. But the big thing I would take Sean to is I would make sure that Sean tried a pizza crunch. And for anybody who's not from the UK, what a pizza crunch is like a frozen pizza cut in half, and you take half of the frozen pizza, you then dip the whole thing in batter, and then you deep fry it.
Wow. That's basically what a calzone is over here, but with different ingredients.
And with batter.
But, yeah, man.
It's incredible. So that would be the two things I would attempt to make Sean try. So
God, my heart is like hurting just thinking about eating that though. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God.
But until your diabetes kicks in, James Wilford wants to know, if Drew beats Randy Orton at Hell in a Cell, who do you think would be Drew's next contender?
Oh God. AJ probably.
I saw somebody mentioned Strowman, but I don't know how you do that so soon, given Strowman just lost to Roman. Although somebody, Ollie from our team, said that he thought that Strowman's new gear makes him look like a landscape gardener, and I now can't get it out of my head. So,
I think it'll be AJ. He's getting Jordan the Ninja as a big soon. That was the plan as of this weekend, was for Jordan the Ninja to be like his bodyguard enforcer on Raw. So
he's not going to be dressed as a ninja with AJ, right?
I sure hope so. Oof. God, I hope so. That'd be amazing.
Oh God. Ian Milne wants to know,
I took one of your ninjas, Tozawa. Then they feud.
God, no. Can you imagine? Ian Milne wants to know, describe Lars Sullivan in one word.
Troubled.
Yeah, my word would be sad. The whole thing's just sad in so many ways. Cammy Hutton wants to know, with Dark Side of the Ring getting 14 episodes for the next season. Woo! 14. What are some of the stories you expect and would like to see on it?
Okay, so some of the ones that I would like to see on it, Plane Ride from Hell. That's one that has not been covered in traditional documentary format. Magnum TA, Brian Pillman, obviously.
Kurt Hennig would be a good one.
Kurt Hennig, Chris Candido, and Sonny. The steroid trial.
The Ring Boy scandal is one.
Ring
you could
Boy
kind
scandal.
Of...
Sid and Arn, the stabbing there.
Vader and Orndorff.
Yeah, Darren Drozdov for sure. I loved Droz when I was younger. Those are some that I'd like to see covered. One that a lot of people don't talk about, Messiah and the Rob Black thing, Messiah in XPW, where he got like his thumbs cut off or something.
Jeez.
Yeah. There were a couple guys that broke into his house and he had his thumb cut off, and it got featured on America's Most Wanted, actually.
Wow. I mean, Dark Side of the Ring is so good. Like, it's I can't believe that nobody had... Because, like, when you think about it, before Dark Side of the Ring came around, you would always kind of think, oh, it'd be great if they did... If somebody could do something on this. And their style of having the kind of actors in the dark playing the stuff, it's so visually stimulating. It's great. And actually, Dean Puckering from ITRWrestling.com said, now that the Bulldog Girl has been found, what other Holy Grail mysteries need to be solved? And there's a couple of people who responded to that. Cammy Hutton said, who threw the pie at Kevin Owens? Anthony Fitzpatrick said, who raised the briefcase at King of the Ring 2000? And what was in Vince's lockbox?
So people always, when I mention the briefcase, they're like, oh, it was Boss Man. He said it the next night. No, he did not. He did not say it. He did not say it. And unless somebody outright says it on screen, you cannot assume anything in WWE. They do not do things like that. They treat you like you're stupid at all times, so you think they're gonna play subtleties with that? Hell no. Yeah, I want to know who raised the briefcase.
I want to know what was in Vince's lockbox.
I do too. And Shane has been asked, and it's very clear he had no idea.
Cammy also says he wants to know who attacked Hideo Itami, who blew up Vince's limo, and why is Kalisto still employed? I don't know if that's a question that really is up with the rest of them, but who blew up Vince's limo would definitely be one. I remember sitting down in one of my flats that I was living in, and I had popcorn ready to watch Raw, and it was going to be the funeral of Vince McMahon, and I was so excited. They remember they'd flown people in, like they'd flown in like Bischoff and Austin and stuff, and then the Benoit graphic came up, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Wasn't Rod McMahon supposed to be on that?
Yes, like, they'd got Rod. They'd got Rod.
Did you know that it was actually pretty funny? When Conrad Thompson lost out on a lot of the WWE people for StarCast, you know how they started to pull people that get advertised. I think he tried to contact Rod McMahon to bring him in.
Amazing. Amazing.
And he got a call like, Conrad, what are you doing? Which is amazing. He's brilliant.
What a great call. Robert Fletcher wants to know, which NXT wrestlers do you think has the most untapped potential? My head says Austin Theory, but my heart says Cameron Grimes because I loved him in Impact.
I actually think it's Damian Priest. I think that even though he's a champion, he could be so much more. He is so good. He looks so cool. He is effortlessly cool, that guy. The way he sounds, the way he looks. But as soon as they turned him babyface, because he got over as a heel. He finally got over as a heel in that Balor match because he was big, badass dude that did cool moves. So they're like, okay, let's go babyface, and we're going to have Cameron Grimes slash your tires and beat you up. He's half your size. And it's like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that if you want people to like him? WWE has this weird thing where they think that people getting beat up 80% of a match and then winning makes them cool. It does not.
It does not. My call would probably be Io Shirai. I think that she's got the potential to be as big a name in the main roster as Asuka is. And yeah. I think that'd be a really great thing to see two, you know, sort of foreign women occupying those top spots and showing how much things have changed compared to the dark days of some of the stereotypes in the past. Jermazing on Twitter says, with the number of main roster wrestlers not being used for weeks or months, even before COVID, could WWE in the future bring another show to work alongside Raw, SmackDown, and NXT? Oh, God, no. Not another one. Imagine more.
I hope they don't, but they were... NXT was talking about doing that NXT Underground thing. I just hope not. I've come to realize, like, a lot of people think that when they started NXT UK, they were supposed to make it the NXT equivalent. No, it's just their way of having a territory in the UK. So who knows what the hell we'll try to do.
Last two questions. We've got Rocky Kingston. It seems as though Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano aren't moving up anytime soon, and Tommaso Ciampa doesn't want to move. So since they're established as the headliners of NXT, does this mean they're on main roster money, which I assume would be the NXT equivalent of main event money?
It's advanced money. A lot of people got raises and new contracts last year ahead of the USA deal or around the time of the USA deal. But I mean, it ain't the $800,000 a year, $700,000 a year that the OC and the Revival were being offered. It ain't that for sure.
Yeah, I'm curious to see in 6 months where, like, because Johnny Gargano feels like he's done everything in NXT. And, you know, if he's getting good money, great. But it feels like eventually Gargano is going to have to go up. I thought he was going to.
I thought him and Candace were going to go to SmackDown right away. But to me, I'm like, okay, they're all on cable TV right now. They're on the same network helping carry a show that Raw is on that same network. So yeah, I think they should be paid accordingly. But in that equation, you got to remember, in any equation where there's a pandemic or the money is less, Vince McMahon is not going to be the guy taking less money. It'll be the wrestlers for sure.
Craig McKeegan wants to know, logic wise, how did you feel about the draft making sense? Things like Titus getting drafted and Andrade not, Ricochet being picked before the New Day. Did it feel like it could have been legit or just storyline nonsense?
No, it didn't feel like it could be legit. There was no storyline reason to draft New Day separately. And any time I get some doofus saying, well, maybe they just wanted Kofi and Xavier. Yeah, I bet they did. I bet they really just said, you know what? Piss off Big E, who has looked like $1 million lately. Draft them all. Trade the one you don't want, if that's the thing. Drafting Titus was so dumb. So dumb. That he got drafted last year, and he's wrestled two actual matches on Raw since then. Just leave him in the pool. Let him show up whenever, wherever you need him. Because it just didn't make any sense. It made people like Chad Gable look worse as a result.
I love your voice of people who respond to you. It's one of my favorite things.
Not people who respond to me. I appreciate anybody who responds to me, but there are some people who go out of their way to excuse trash. And when they say stuff like, wrestling never makes sense. You're asking too much of them. No, I'm not asking too much of them. It's easy. It's very easy. If you all want to excuse trash, go ahead and do it. Enjoy the show to the best of your ability or to your desires, and I will desire to make sense out of stuff.
I'm going to ask you one question that somebody actually asked Sondra and I yesterday on Patreon. I thought I would just ask you because I'm intrigued by the answer. Which McMahon do you think you are most like?
Shane. Without a doubt.
Yeah, you would definitely start Raw Underground. That's totally the type of guy you
I would. Yeah. I love it. And I just think that Shane is probably the one I would relate to most. I think I could have an actual conversation with Shane. I know he likes MMA. I know he trains a lot of kickboxing. Those are general interests of mine. I think him for sure. I would like to most have a conversation with Vince McMahon because I want to know how his brain works or if it does. So, yeah.
There you go. My one, I think, unfortunately, I would most be like Vince, but not in the most extreme ways. Just more like, you know, never stop doing the work stuff and a bit maniacal about it and that kind of stuff. I mean, and also, look, if I had loads of money, would I get a yacht that said the sexy bitch? I can't say I wouldn't. I can't rule it out completely. So I think based on that, I have to at least put that out there. Sean, what are the plugs? How can people get involved with you and find out more of the stories that you were telling us today throughout the week?
Fightful.com. That's where you can find wrestling and MMA content. This weekend's a big one. Impact Bound for Glory on Saturday. There's a big UFC pay-per-view, Habib versus Gaethje, on Saturday night at the same time. Sunday, of course, WWE, Hell in a Cell. We've got full coverage of that. We've got tons of shows. After Raw, SmackDown, I'm returning to the NXT AEW review this week, or not this week, in November, but I got an interview with Sami Callihan going up, and I will have another interview going up this week. I just can't say who it is yet because I want to make sure the interview actually happens. But I drop a series every once in a while called Enhancement Stories, where if I'm interviewing like a vet or a surefire like future star, I'll talk to them about a time they worked an enhancement match, and then I'll put it in the can for a long time. I'll separate it from our normal interview, and I'll wait until they like hit it big or have something going on to release. I'm doing that this week. Big Swole talks about her match with Nia Jax from years ago. I've had this one in the can forever, but as you know, Kenny, sometimes it's not so easy to get interviews, whether it be from WWE or AEW or whatever. So this is my way of kind of circumventing that. And it was not tough to tell a couple years ago that Big Swole was going to be a star in wrestling. So that's going to be dropping soon. I've got some with like Gangrel and Britt Baker, Jimmy Jacobs, a lot of cool ones in that series. And FightfulSelect.com, that's where you all can support us directly. The stories that you heard me talk about today, we broke on FightfulSelect.com. I was not keen on a subscription format or anything like that, but I can't tell you how important that is to our writers and paying them and our podcasters and all that. So support is appreciated.
Support is always appreciated, and support is appreciated with us, Inside the Ropes, as well. There's so much going on. I'll try and make it into just a few plugs. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com is where you can pick up issue 2 with Roman Reigns on the cover and the big Jerry Lawler interview, and I tell a story about when I had to run off the stage with Stu Bennett because I needed to vomit. You can get all that in there. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. We've just hit 180,000 subscribers. Thank fuck we have a ton of archive live event content, because otherwise I don't know how we would keep it going. Get interview content going up all the time. ITRWrestling.com is where you can find a plethora of stuff as well. Daily columns, interviews, news. And finally, Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is how you can support us. That's how we get people like Finn and Sondra to take so much time out of their schedules to podcast with us. So this time next week when we talk, Sean, there will be a lot to unpack, I'm guessing, from Bound for Glory.
Yes.
Hell in a Cell. Whew. It's probably going to be a big one. But I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much for your support, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.